Welcome to the Small Business Whole Health Podcast. We help you stay happy, healthy, and whole so your small business can thrive and stay vital in this ever-changing world. With holistic coaches and small business owners, Jill and Dan.
Hello, and welcome to the Small Business Whole Health Podcast. I'm Jill, and I'm here with my podcasting partner, Dan.
I've got the wrong teeth in.
What was going on then? It's really hard to say that, podcasting partner. This podcast today is going to fit in nicely with the one that we recorded on cognitive dissonance, right? So today we are going to talk about, because both Dan and I are big fans of Derren Brown, right? And we both watched, after we'd done the podcast the other week about cognitive dissonance, Dan says, oh, have you seen that Derren Brown one called The Push? So we've both watched it again, and then we thought we'd do a little podcast just about it because it fits in nicely with the whole cognitive dissonance kind of thing, doesn't it, Dan?
Yeah, we're both massive fans of Derren Brown, and he's the psychological manipulation that he uses to get people to do stuff. I find it fascinating. And I've seen him in the theatre as well at Sunderland, and it's even more impressive when you see it actually done in front of your eyes as well. But some of the things we're going to talk about today obviously come from just sheer interest out of watching the show, but a lot of them are also happening in this whole pandemic situation, aren't they? And when you learn about it, you can see it happening in front of your eyes. So it's really relevant, and I think it's important to talk about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, these kind of things that we're going to talk about, which is more or less the power of persuasion and how you're manipulated by the people who are around you in a way, it's really important when you're running your own business as well, because this is what marketers use all the time, right?
Yeah, some of the techniques we're going to give, but most of them apply to sales and marketing massively, don't they?
Oh, God, yes.
The guy, I think I've mentioned him before, I follow Gary Vee quite a lot, and he talks about marketers ruin everything because they always find a way to manipulate people to get money out of them. So like when social media came around, initially, that wasn't to make money in any way, but now that's all social media is. It just sells stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So marketers ruin everything in the end.
It's everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like any kind of, it's like water gets everywhere, any gaps. Yeah. So shall we talk about what The Push is, Dan? So if you've not watched The Push, before you listen to this podcast, go and watch it first. It's on Netflix, isn't it? It's called The Push by Derren Brown. If you just search for that, then go and watch that first before you listen to us. Otherwise, there's some big spoiler alerts, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of that. So, yeah, so press pause now. Go and watch The Push. But it is brilliant if you're into that type of thing. It really does keep you on the edge of your seat, doesn't it?
Yeah. So pause now because we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So first things first, Dan. So what is The Push?
Obviously, if you've never heard of Derren Brown, he is, what would you call him, a psychological illusionist?
Mentalist?
I don't know.
Yeah. But
he's really clever. He actually does a good podcast with Joe Rogan back in the day. That's pretty fascinating. So yeah, he uses all these subtle psychological techniques to, I think in his own words, he's built his own career on two things. It's getting thoughts from people's heads into his head and putting his thoughts into other people's heads so he can pretty much get you to do what he wants. So in The Push, it's an elaborate setup to get someone to do a series of small favors, small acts, which lead up to something a lot bigger, which ends up being pushing someone to the death and murdering someone off the top of a building. And yeah, it's surprising how easily he gets, well, I say easily, but he gets them to do it, or he gets 3 out of 4 people to do it. But it's a big setup, but there's obviously a lot of preparation involved. But watching the subtle techniques he uses to get someone to go from a tiny little favor, which you wouldn't even consider, to an hour later murdering someone, it's just mind-blowing how he does it, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I found it really interesting was how he picked his candidates to do this. So he didn't just pick random people off the street, did he? He had people who'd written into him to say that they wanted to be on one of his TV shows. And so they came for an audition, didn't they? And he did some quite interesting, based on really famous experiments. And one of them was, which I thought was really funny, was he had 3 actors first sitting in a row of chairs, and they had a bell ringing every time the bell rang, the three actors stood up, and then every time it rang again, they sat down. So that's what they were doing. Ting, stand up, ting, sit down. So the new person came in who was going to audition, and he didn't know what this was. So he came and sat down in the chair next to the three, and ting, they stood up, ting, they sat. And he's kind of looking around at first, and then he joins in, doesn't he? And you can tell by his face that he's got no idea why they're doing this. And then the next person comes in, and then they're kind of looking around, and then ting, stand up, ting, sit down. So they start doing it. One woman doesn't do it, does she? She's just sit there writing her notes, and she gets
removed,
chucked out. So eventually what he's got is about a row of 20 people, haven't they? Like ting, standing up, ting, sitting down. They've got no idea why they're doing it. And then somebody comes out and takes the three original actors away. So ting, sit down, ting, stand up. Darren Brown's going, look, these people have no idea why they're doing that, because the original three were removed. It was really funny, wasn't it? You could see them like kind of looking at each other, but they were still doing it, weren't they? It was really funny.
That was the whole premise of the show, really, wasn't it? Just being compliant, because other people are doing it, so you used to assume that that's the right thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, so those are the kind of people he wanted as well, those that he could influence quite easily.
Yeah, that's quite an important thing to take away from the show, which it gets brushed over a little bit. Obviously, the show has to be dramatic and keep your attention, but there's three out of four people push someone to the death where they don't actually die. It's a trick, but they think they have. They think they've murdered someone, don't they?
Yeah.
But these people were chosen because they are very susceptible to social compliance. And the people who auditioned originally who weren't socially compliant got removed. So the show might not have been as good if he'd have chose people who were more independent.
Yeah. And we all like to think, don't we? Both you and I go, well, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, we probably would, because the power of a group is really, really strong, isn't it?
Yeah. Because it's the techniques he uses, which you literally wouldn't even consider. So we're going to discuss kind of some of the techniques which people use, particularly marketers, to get you to hand over your money. Basically, but it happens in other situations as well. And it's like we said at the start of the show, it's happening now in the whole pandemic situation. There's lots of little things people are complying to without question from authority figures. And it's going to lead, or conspiracy alert, it might lead to something a lot bigger. But because you've agreed to a lot of smaller steps, like wearing a mask, like not using paper money, like staying indoors, telling on your neighbour when they go out, all these little things could build up to something a lot bigger, like just get this vaccine. And there's a name for it. It's called the foot in the door technique. So you've got a higher chance of agreeing to something big if you've agreed to a lot of smaller things, which is what the show uses, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. And the other thing that you mentioned there was authority figures, because the other thing that he did with one of the candidates was get them to steal a baby off a mother, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting about that bit.
Yeah. So what they did was they got one of the candidates and said, ring this restaurant, ring this cafe. And she was an actress and it was a fake baby, but he didn't know that, and nor did the person who they were calling in the cafe. And he rang the cafe and the guy behind the counter answered, and he said, look, I'm calling from blah, 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 police authority. There's a lady in there with a red pram. She has actually stolen that baby. We need to get it back. So I'm going to ring you on this other... And he made it all really official, didn't he? And he said, like, there's police surrounding the place and we need to get that baby back, but we don't need to let the lady know that this is happening. So act calm, act cool. And he said, I'm going to ring you on a different phone and I'm going to say that I need you to say to the lady that there's a phone call for her. So he did it all, didn't he, without questioning. Yeah. And then he said, right, listen very closely. When she goes to pick that phone up, you need to take the pram calmly out of the shop and walk down the road. And he's like walking down the road with this baby going, this doesn't feel, and he knew it didn't feel right, didn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't he? That's complete cognitive dissonance, because he knew that he shouldn't be taking this baby out. He didn't know who was on the phone. I think he started to realize, didn't he, as he was walking down the road. And then Darren Brown popped out around the corner and he said, you realize you've just stolen a baby.
And it didn't even take long. It was like 5 minutes, not even that. And this guy just going about his everyday life had just stolen a woman's baby.
Yeah.
So that's a good jump off point to say that there's a difference between compliance and obedience. There's two be similar, but there's a slight difference. So compliance will be agreeing with someone, but you still have the choice. So say, for instance, someone tries to sell you something. They might convince you to buy something, but ultimately you still have the choice. You can always say no, but obedience, it comes from an authority figure where you don't have the chance. So say a police officer or government, or for instance, someone held you hostage and they got a gun to your head, you have to obey what they say. But if you're just being compliant, you still have a choice, don't you? So there is a difference.
Yeah, and that whole authority figure thing is really significant, because we will do stuff when there's this really famous con artist in America, and he would go to a McDonald's store and see who was like in that drive-thru, and if it was a woman serving. And it's a really famous court case, actually. I think she was called Louise, it's like an African sounding name. Anyway, what happened was, so this guy had driven in and seen this lady, and he rang the manager at the McDonald's place and said, look, he says, I am the corporate manager of wherever the McDonald's was. I've had reports that there's a lady, we can see her on the VT cameras, that she's taken money out of the till. And he described her perfectly, because obviously he'd just seen her. He says, I need you to take her into the back room and tell her to remove all of her clothes. And this manager just did this, and he said, right, I'm going to stay on the phone. I need you to do like a full strip search on it. And like, and he'd done this so many times. So this perfectly normal woman and this perfectly normal manager, suddenly she's getting strip searched. And it's like, and it was just a con artist, and it went on, and he kept her there for days, really. And it's like really famous. And that was just because there was the voice of an authority figure.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
Scary.
Yeah. Well, like Darren, in this show, Darren Brown, it's not actually him. He gets someone else to do it. But like you say, people commit murder.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there was, I know he's obviously very skilled in psychology, but I wonder how those people feel now after, because they thought they were totally independent people and they ended up potentially murdering someone. I wonder how they feel now. I wonder if there was a lot of counseling afterwards, because they probably felt really guilty and they probably never thought they could do something like that.
I do think sometimes it must cause serious psychological damage.
Yeah,
what
if there's been any like payouts? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're going on about kind of, it's persuasion, isn't it? It's the power of persuasion and the power of groups around you and your environment. And this is really important for when you're building habits or wanting to change your life. If you're still surrounded by the people who are not helping you in any way, like, for example, if you're trying to lead a healthy lifestyle and all your friends want to go out and have 10 pints and a kebab, that's not conducive to your new healthy lifestyle. And a lot of people really struggle with this, in that it's sometimes not them that's leading themselves astray. They've got the best of intentions, but it's the power of the group that will influence them, right?
Yeah. In the health topic, it's just because the obesity rates and people being unhealthy are quite high, aren't they? So don't use that as an excuse. Don't convince yourself, oh, well, 9 out of 10 people are obese. That means that I can be lazy as well. Just because the group do it doesn't mean that it's right.
Yeah.
There's common and there's normal. So because it's common for a lot of people to be overweight and unhealthy doesn't mean it's normal. People get that mixed up, don't they?
So yeah.
Don't follow the group. You have to be independent when you know it's for your, especially for health.
Yeah, especially at the moment as well, because, you know, our Prime Minister has come out, gone on the camera going, right, we're going to have a war on obesity, I think that was his words, and he was cycling around, and they've started to put in, like, no adverts for fast food after 9 o'clock or something like that, and started putting stuff in, because that's the environmental influences that are happening to you all the time. If you're sitting trying to eat a healthy meal and you see an advert for a burger, you know, you're going to start to think, oh, I want a burger. It's that seed that's been planted into you. And that's what Darren Brown was talking about, right? Wasn't it? The little seed that gets planted into you then suddenly grows. And if you're walking past a McDonald's every day and you're thinking about that burger, it doesn't take that much for you to just stray offline, does it? Then go into there.
No, then especially once if you cross that line and you get it and you get the burger and then you think, oh, it's only once. But these foods are designed to be addictive.
Yeah.
So literally that can just start a chain process, can't it?
Yeah, did you know that ice cream is the perfect combination of 50% fat and 50% sugar? So it not only satisfies our cravings for sugar, but also that it keeps it in, it tastes nice and the texture's nice as well.
Yeah, the scientists give it a term, didn't they? It's called the bliss point.
Ah.
It's so it's the taste of the sugar. I think it's also involved in the lack of nutrients as well. So you keep having more because your body thinks, oh, I'm eating food, but normally your DNA when you is built, so when you eat food, you become satiated. But because there's not enough nutrients in, you eat more. So you, like, have you ever noticed how we've all done it when you can't just have one Dorito, you end up making your way through a full bag? It's because your body it's enjoying the hit of the sugar, but it's also searching for the nutrients. So you keep going back and you go for more and more and more. It's not right really, but again, when it's all about the almighty dollar, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's what people don't realize. Like even 20, 30 years ago, there wasn't all these fast food places around. So environmentally, we didn't have those influences happening all the time, constantly bombarded by them. And once you start becoming aware of that, it becomes a lot easier to avoid, right? And to understand that that's what's triggering you. It's understanding what the triggers are for you to change.
Yeah, we need to be aware that we all suffer from social compliance to some degree, because it's within us, like evolutionary speaking, it's safe to follow the group. We're all part of it's safe being part of a tribe. You want to fit in. But if that's going to go against your health and your individual morals and values, then you have to change. And that's what we spoke about the other day of cognitive dissonance. If you follow the crowd, but it goes against your values, then that feeling of discomfort or dissonance is going to be huge, isn't it? And that's what you kind of need to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about the powers of persuasion, which can sometimes create that dissonance inside of you, there are 6 persuasion tactics that are used against you all the time. Yeah. Should we go through them or should we just keep them a secret?
Should we start using them now? Yeah. I mean, when I was doing a little bit of research on this, it was a lot of it was involved in money and things like that, and like kind of salespeople and marketers. So if you can get your head around these, you can then try and spot them when people are using them against you. So these are very subtle, but they're also elaborate in how clever they are and like the psychological manipulations. So beware. Yeah.
Beware. So the first one, reciprocation. Now I see this one a lot. Buy one, get one free. That's part of reciprocation. And I see a lot of people say, just come for your first one free, because then you feel like if you go for the first one, you've got to go for another one. That's the kind of stuff. So if you, anything that a company's giving you, you feel like obliged to then buy more of it.
Yeah. And you've got to realize it's not like you're getting it for free, because they've already budgeted in that. See, if it's a really fancy gym membership, this expensive new gym, you get your first month free. Well, they've already budgeted that in. If you're going to pay for the next 12 months, then they can afford to give you the first month for free.
Exactly. It's on a lot of these things that, like when we've been doing the podcast, you sign up for, you know, 12 months hosting and get 3 months free or something like that. You know, it's all of that stuff. Like vouchers, you know, the stamp cards and stuff, buy 10 coffees, get your 11th one free. Haircuts, yeah. That kind of stuff. It's all reciprocation. It keeps you coming back, yeah?
Yeah. So you spend £75 on fancy coffee for the one free one, which is worth £4.50.
McDonald's does it as well for theirs, doesn't it? They have a little stamper sheet thing.
Yeah. Psychological warfare on you.
Keep coming back. Keep coming back and spending money. So reciprocation is a big, big, powerful one of persuasion, yeah?
Yeah.
Did Darren Brown use reciprocation in The Push?
The way he used reciprocation is because there's two main characters involved. And when the main character did something, the guy who was unbeknownst that he was being tricked, he just did it as well. So there's the part where the sausage rolls, where there's vegetarians, normal ones. So one guy just gives the vegetarians meat. So, and the other guy knows it's wrong, but he reciprocates because he doesn't want to disappoint them.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a powerful persuader. Number 2 is commitment and consistency. I've got a quote for you here from Leonardo da Vinci, no less. It is easier to resist at the beginning than at the end. So you've got a good example of this, haven't you, from the airlines?
Yeah, so it also gets called the low ball technique, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So we've all done this. If you're looking to go on holiday and you go on, the one I use is Skyscanner to get your flights. So it comes up, say you're going to Spain, you can get a flight to Spain for £50, and you think, wow, that's like half price anywhere else I've found it. So you click on the link and you go through, brilliant, I'm going to get this, dates are perfect. Then it comes up. So you've already committed that that's the one you want. That's the date. That's the airline. So your commitment's already pretty high. But then it comes up another £20 for luggage. And then it's another £15 for an aisle seat. Then there's all these add-ons. But because you've committed, your chances of clicking on all these add-ons are the same. And by the end, your £50 flight to Spain has gone up to £120. But you're more likely to accept that £120 because your commitment's high.
Yeah. That's true. And that's what they did in the push as well. They got them to commit to little things. They, at the beginning, can you remember when he got the guy to go meet the head of the thing about this charity? And he got them to sign up initially. And he thought that they were it was going to be a big event. And so that got him committed to it. So he was already committed to having to go to this place and, you know, do this stuff, do whatever it takes. That's what they kept saying, isn't it? Do whatever it takes to get the charity on board. So yeah, so it, once he was committed to that, it was really hard for him to back out. And again, once it was committed to moving the dead body of the guy they thought initially had died, they got him to move the body. And so even that was like, he was committed then, wasn't he, to carry on with the whole thing because he'd made that commitment. It was really hard for him to untangle himself from it, really.
Yeah, and before we came on air, we were speaking about this, and you've got the book there by
called Robert. I don't know how to say it. Robert Cialdini. Cialdini.
We'll call him Robert.
Bob.
Yeah, he was the professor, I assume, of psychology.
Yes.
So he did a. There's probably a lot more examples in the book, but the one I read, he had his students and he said, oh, well, tomorrow we're going to do a psychological study, an experiment. And it starts at 7 a.m. and it's going to be really fun and it would be great if you can all be involved. But most of the people said no because it started at 7 a.m. They couldn't be bothered to turn up at 7 a.m. So then a couple of weeks later on a different set of students, he rephrased it. He said, oh, tomorrow we're going to do a psychological study. It's going to be really fun. Who wants to join in? And 95% of his students said yes. So he committed. And then after that, he said, great. So it starts tomorrow at 7 a.m. I'll see you there. And 95% of the students turned up and did it. Because they'd already committed. But when he told them that they had to start at 7 a.m. in the first place, because they had more information, then they had more of a chance to say no. And so this happens quite a lot, doesn't it?
Interesting. Yes. Sneaky. And you can see how marketers can use all of this stuff to get you committed in the first instance. Yeah. Like the small end of the wedge.
The low ball technique,
So the next one is social proofing. Now, we use this one as well, Dan, don't we? Because we always ask you to leave feedback and leave us messages and stuff. And it's what we do to, you know, when you're going to buy something off Amazon, my husband's terrible for this. He like reads all the reviews and it's basically what does the group, you're looking for advice from the group to see if it's a good thing or not, right?
Yeah, this is a massive one, but I think this is one of the most obvious ones as well. Like you go on Amazon and you only buy stuff that has the 5-star reviews, but you don't know these people. You could be absolute idiots. But it works. It absolutely works. And you had a really good example when we were talking off air about, was it eBay? And I think Uber do it to some degree as well. How it's what's the term? Self-regulating.
Self-regulating, yeah. So I think eBay were the first ones to do it. And it's genius, really, that you say what kind of buyer, you leave feedback for the buyer, but you also leave feedback for the seller. So if the seller doesn't send the stuff on time or they come damaged, then people aren't going to buy from them. And equally, if the buyer doesn't pay on time or return stuff broken and stuff like that, then people aren't going to sell to them. So it's a self-regulating and monitoring system, which is genius, really. And a lot of other companies have developed that. Like you say, Uber do the same, Airbnb do the same now. And it's consumer regulation, isn't it? It's just self by itself. So it's clever.
I think this is one of the situations where social compliance is a good thing. So most of the things we've spoken about so far are like sneaky manipulations to try and get money off you to get you to do what you want. This is actually a good thing because it's kind of the safety in numbers. You think, well, if 1,000 people have used this hotel and they know it's really clean and the staff are friendly and it's good value, then I feel safe doing this as well. That's where, in terms of business, referrals are really good. Most of the time, a lot of business comes from referrals, because if your friend says, oh, go and use Jill, she's a fantastic Pilates coach, they already have trust in their friend, so they know they have good judgment.
Yeah.
But it's just social compliance as well. So
yeah, but also it can be used for evil purposes as well. If we think about how, I'm going back to 1984 now, regulating on your neighbours, that was commonplace in 1984, and it was, what's the word, encouraged by the government, if you could dob people in, so that, you know, we can kind of see it nowadays. Somebody was talking the other day about, I can't remember, like on Facebook, if someone during lockdown was out in their garden or something, on these groups, I could see people going, so-and-so was out in their garden with another person. It's like, that's a type of social proofing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's divide and conquer, isn't it? Get people to fight among themselves.
Yeah.
I've known people who have, there's been neighbours taking videos of them going in and out because you're only allowed to leave the house once a day. But the neighbours stood on the front lawn taking videos of them because they've been coming and going too much.
No way.
But little do they know, they could be going to work, they could be working in a hospital, they could be...
Yeah. That's what some people put on the group that I was like, this person is a key worker, you know, works night shift all the time. And
how do they know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's how social proofing can be used as well. The fourth one is likability, liking. We tend to follow and buy off people that we like. This is why con artists, you know, come across as so charismatic. And then once they've nicked all your money, they go, well, I never expected it to seem so nice, so likable. Yeah. So,
yeah. I think that's where a lot of marketing today is influencer, social media influencers. Because people buy off people they want to be like or they admire. But a lot of the time it's fake. They're just doing it for the money.
Yeah.
So you get someone like Cristiano Ronaldo. He's one of the big advocates of, well, he's part of the sales team of, I don't know what they call, but these devices, what you put on your stomach muscles, on your abs, and they like vibrate and they twitch.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way in hell he sits and uses that to get his six pack. Been training like an athlete for like 25 years. He does sprints. He's probably got some of the best personal trainers in the world. Like his diet is super clean. But people who are uneducated, or maybe the younger generation and they don't know, or people who just want shortcuts. Oh, well, if I can just sit and watch the telly with this six pack device on and plug it into the wall, I'm going to have a six pack like Ronaldo.
Yeah.
If he's got one and he uses it, why can't I do it?
Yeah, I remember when Ronaldo was... he was promoting one of the ambassadors for one of these diet shake things, and everyone was going, oh, Ronaldo uses it. I was like, there was no way Ronaldo drinks. He might have drank it for a photograph, but there's no way he got his six pack and his body and physique and athleticism from drinking shakes. He'll have one of the top nutritionists in the land doing his meals.
Yeah, but it's manipulation. Because you see the photos, and a lot of people who aren't as in, like Ronaldo is like a good example, but he actually is fit and healthy and he looks good. But other people can put a photo on social media and it's not even them, it's been photoshopped. And, and then all the millions of likes, they can be bought and they can be manipulated. So a lot of it's fake, so just beware.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of this is about being aware of how you're being influenced and how you're being persuaded to buy something or to act a certain way. Kind of links into to Lee's podcast as well, when we interviewed Lee, and he was talking about, what was it, you'll have to say it because I've got my teeth in.
The totalitarian tiptoe.
Yes, the totalitarian tiptoe. And this is what, these are powerful. This is what can be influencing your left, right and center. And this next one's a biggie.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say that that last one, it gets called the foot in the door technique, which Darren Brown talks about in The Push, and it's really clever. So the foot in the door technique is when you agree to a lot of small favors, we should say, but that increases your chance that you're going to agree to a big favor in the end. So it's very relevant today, whether you believe in the real information that's coming out about the pandemic. But just imagine this, you agree to stay in your house for 4 months. You agree to spy on your neighbors. You agree to wear a face mask. All these little agreements you make, which seem like nothing, but then it increases your chances of doing something really big in the future, like agreeing to a vaccine, which may or may not be unhealthy. This is just my opinion, but it's something to think about, and it kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's what political parties use a lot of this, actually. Get you to wear a little badge with, or put a thing in your window, a little poster in your window, and you're more likely to then go out and vote. It's proven, it's scientifically proven that if you can agree to put a sticker in your window, that you'll actually go and vote for that party.
It's there, isn't it?
It's there, Dan. Yeah. We are just apes. How was it described last night? I think someone was describing, oh, you know, I've been obsessed by that body language.
Oh, yeah.
I've got obsessed by it. I'm just, a quick diversion, listeners. So on YouTube, there's these guys called the Behaviour Panel, and they're four body language experts. And they've been, I've been watching the Prince Andrew interviews, and it's so interesting. If you get a chance, go and listen to them. So I was watching one on Donald Trump last night, and they were calling him a griller, griller in a suit, because his emotions and expressions are so, like, they're just like ape-like, you know? And they were like, he just hasn't really evolved.
You've got to give him a little bit more credit than that.
But it's so true. We are just grillers. We're apes. And, you know, we've got this brain that's amazing, but it's like 2 million years old. It hasn't really evolved very far from, you know, the last 100, 200, 300 years. Think how much things have moved on, but our brain hasn't moved on anyway. So all these things, really powerful stuff.
We spoke about those kind of small steps, I think you call it the thin end of the wedge. That's a good way to describe it. But there's also a reverse technique to that as well. So this one's called the door in the face technique, or it's got a few other terms. But this one is when someone asks you for a really large commitment, they expect you to say no because it's too big. But that means that your chances of agreeing to a smaller request are going to be increased. So it's the reverse of the other one. So the example I like to use is, well, imagine if I said, oh, Jill, can I borrow your car for a week? That's pretty unreasonable, and I'm not expecting you to say yes. So you would say no. So then I would say, oh, well, can I borrow it for 3 days? You're probably still likely to say no. It's still pretty unreasonable, but that's not really what I'm after. And I say, can I just borrow it today just to drive to the shops? And because you've said no twice and you're feeling guilty, then you're more likely to say yes for the third request, which is all I want anyway. So beware of marketers doing that as well. Asking for something far too big, which means you're going to agree to something smaller. Like we spoke about, say, car sales. So how much is this? Oh, it's 10 grand. 10 grand, I'm not paying that. Oh, well, that's 5. Well, I'll give you 4. So you give them 4, and really it's only worth 2.
Yes.
But that's called the door in the face technique.
And I've also heard it called price anchoring as well, because we go in with a set price in our head as to what we think it's worth. And then they go, well, you think it was worth 5 grand. They say, it's actually worth 12. So they put it over. That's where bartering comes in, you know, and you go on holiday and I hate it. Do you hate it, bartering?
Well, everything should just have a price. That's not fair.
Yeah, just tell us the price and I'll pay it. I don't want to go like, no, I'm not paying that, and walk away. And like this whole theatrics of it, I just hate it. It was so English.
Apart from Del Boy.
Yeah. Right, the next one. Are we finished with that one?
Yep.
We've got another two to get through again. This one I think is powerful. Authority, as in the Darren Brown thing, stealing the baby. Said that you're an authority figure. Anything to do with authority, where we think that, and this is can do with your God programming as well, that we learn in the Czech Institute, don't we? You know, like we think that somebody up there, bigger, is going to save us or going to tell us what to do.
You need to be aware of what an authority is. So a celebrity is not an authority. It's just someone you look up to. There is actually people out there with authority and they abuse it. So there's certain, obviously it's very relevant now, like police officers, and people in governments who make laws. To live in society, we have to obey to some degree. We can question things, but in the end, you have to obey, don't you? And also, yeah, so that leads us, I wanted to mention this as well, the Stanford prison experiment.
Oh, yes.
That was fascinating. I think a few people might have heard of this, but there's some documentaries. And so the Stanford prison experiment was an experiment ran by Philip Zimbardo. I think he was a professor of psychology. And he got his students, he was going to run an experiment. I forget the numbers, but I think there was kind of 20 students, and he made 5 of the students pretend prison guards and the other 15 as pretend prisoners.
Mm.
And the experiment was due to be run over a 2-week period. The guards had to act like guards and the prisoners just had to act like prisoners. And it was run in the basement of Stanford University. But after only 6 days, it had to be called off because the guards started being abusive to the prisoners, and the prisoners were getting anxious and stressed. Like, so the power went to the head straight away. Even though it was all fake, it was all just an experiment and they all knew each other. It had to get called off after only 6 days.
Wow.
And it demonstrated how people just comply with expectations from in like a certain social role, like an authority figure. Even though it was all fake, they took it so serious and they started abusing the prisoners. And it's a really famous study, the Stanford prison experiment. So that sounds interesting, listeners, go and research it. The guy's still alive, Philip Zimbardo. He's been on the Joe Rogan podcast, I think. He might have been on London Real. And it's fascinating, but it goes to show how we have these images and roles that we assume people have, and we just accept that that's what it is.
Yeah, and in The Push as well, Darren Brown uses authority really well. He gets like loads of famous people, doesn't he, as well? It's a bit like the influencing one, and gets them to say, yes, this is a really good charity. And so it gives it that whole authority and social proofing as well, doesn't it? So it's really powerful. Like, we don't underestimate any of this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. When you start to hear of all these techniques, you start to think, well, how much of my own actions and thoughts are actually mine? I bet not a lot of them are. I bet everything comes from an influence.
It freaks you out a little bit, doesn't it?
Like, yeah. You think, am I actually making my own decisions? Or someone,
I know.
Am I just getting led from all these different directions?
I know. It's scary, really scary. So authority is a very powerful one. Doctors, authority figures, priests.
Yeah, doctors is a good one. I never thought of that.
Mm. Next one, the last one, scarcity. Bye now.
Yeah.
Only 2 left. We're not going to have many more. We're never going to give you this opportunity again.
So me and you have studied a little bit of, there's a famous marketer called Russell Brunson, and he has a technique called the one-time offer. Or it sometimes in other circles, it gets called the that's not all technique. So this is, say you agree to buy an online course for £1,000. And then you put your credit card details in, and you go all the way through, and you've pressed pay. So you've agreed that you're going to go for it. And then there's a page pops up next and it says, one-time offer. You will never receive this offer again.
Mm.
Buy this extra course for the one-time price of £399. It will never be at this price again. But because you've already committed to buy the course, you're in the mood for buying as well. And you think, well, I'm never going to get this deal again. Even for that company, if only 1 out of 3 people took that offer, it's £400 that they would never have.
Yeah, yeah.
It happens everywhere.
Happens all the time. I've only got 1 left. Better buy this.
Yeah. Even on Amazon, it tells you only 2 remaining in stock.
Yeah.
So you think you're going to miss out.
Power of scarcity.
Mm.
Really powerful. So, listeners, we hope you've enjoyed that. Have you got anything else there, Dan, on your notes?
The only last thing I would think is, we've kind of brushed over it a lot, but that group affiliation, just because the rest of the group are doing it, doesn't mean that it's right. Don't go against your morals. And the example that I got was like mob mentality. So people who go to protests, and because it's peaceful, then other people start kicking off. Doesn't mean you have to, but you get swept up in the whole thing, like football supporters in a stadium. Like, you might be quite a peaceful, just normal person, but then the rest of your fans, the rest of your tribe, start abusing the referee or the other supporters, and it gets quite heated, and you end up getting swept up and joining in, even though that's not really your character, like that mob mentality or group affiliation.
Yeah.
So it's okay to some degree. Like it is, like I say, evolutionary. We like being in part of a tribe or a group, but don't go against your morals, or at least become aware of when you do. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, being aware of when it's happening. Like at the end of that Darren Brown, the push, they all said they were going to become a lot more aware and try and live their lives, like not being influenced by others, which I don't think that's possible, because we'll all get influenced at somewhere along the line. But they all said they're going to be much more aware of it and just try to not be as socially compliant.
So. Yeah, but I think, like we said earlier, if nearly all of our ideas and thoughts come from somewhere, because from growing up as babies into children into adolescence, we get taught, people teach us how to navigate the world. So all of our thoughts essentially come from somewhere else. And that's even stronger if you're part of like religion you mentioned earlier. I didn't really think about that, but it's programming really, isn't it?
Mm.
You get programmed what to think. So there's a famous saying, isn't it? You don't get taught how to think, you get taught what to think.
What to think, yeah.
Is it Mark Twain? Don't let your schooling get in the way of your education.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Bob
so,
Dylan? No, I think it's Mark Twain.
Yeah, don't let your schooling get in the way of education. So don't, just because someone tells you it doesn't mean it's right. Educate yourself and do what you know to be true.
That's a good place to finish, Dan.
Yeah.
That was a
I've liked this one. I enjoyed learning about it a little bit more.
Yeah, so this podcast really fits well with the cognitive dissonance, because when you watch that push, you can see that cognitive dissonance in those people, can't you? They know that they shouldn't be doing this stuff, but they're getting swept along with the crowd. They're being persuaded by these powerful persuasion techniques that we've talked about today. So it's really interesting to go and watch that and just see how these things play out in real life.
You can literally see it on the body language and the faces. Cognitive dissonance is... it's a term and it's a technique, but you can actually see it happening in people when they're going against the morals and they act in a different way.
Yeah. And they're doing things that they never, ever dreamt that they would be doing. And you can see just like how awful it is for them. You really feel for them, don't you?
I know, yeah. So it would be great, listeners, if you have seen the show or you've gone away and watched it, give us some feedback and tell us what you think. Because I think that everything Darren Brown does is fascinating. Some of the things he talks about and shows us are happening right now. So, yeah, let us know what you think.
Yeah, give us some social proof.
Yeah. We've given away all our techniques now, Jill.
I've been really not likable at all. Right, grumpy gits in real life. Yeah. Yeah, so, excellent. Right, Dan, where can we find you this week?
If you go to Facebook, Daniel Purvis Health and Fitness, and the podcast is out there in the cyber world on iTunes and Spotify, and we're on Alexa now, and Podbean.
Yes, we're on Alexa now, so if you want to listen to our podcast via your device, then you can just search for us and we should be on there.
Cool. Where can people find you?
Organicpilates.co.uk. I'm busy getting my studio organized, back for classes soon in person. Yay! Although I've loved Zoom and I still will do some Zoom classes, but going to be nice to get back as well into the real world.
Yeah, it'll feel nice teaching and being back in the studio, won't it?
Yes, I've got big plans for it. I'm not going to tell you right now online. I'll tell you offline.
That's me, listeners. Not telling you, we're not giving anything away.
Yeah, so yeah, it's all good. So we'll see you all next time. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, everyone. See you soon.
Bye.